The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Now we're flicking through some of the Sunday newspapers, the headline in The Independent: revenue nets 10 million euro in black market crackdown, builders, hairdressers and takeaways. That's according to the Sunday Independent. One third of Soc Dems' new voters are people who deserted Sinn Féin, says another headline. The Business Post: state's record 11.8 billion spend to prop up the housing market. We look at that in some detail in a little while. The Irish Mail on Sunday: Kinahan lands, a bit premature, I think, as bomb squad sweeps the court. And Kinahan making a lot of the headlines in the newspapers. The Sunday Times: Kinahan at risk from cartel and rivals on his what they call bittersweet return. And a minister concerned by delays to critical power link between this island and France. And the Irish Sun on Sunday: it's nice to get back home. That's in quotes, and it's referring once again to Daniel Kinahan. So Brenda Power, a columnist with the Sunday Times and the Irish Daily Mail, is with me. She's been going through the papers in some detail. Brenda, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Pat.
So it's Kinahan, Kinahan, Kinahan.
It's wall-to-wall Kinahan this morning, yes. This really is, as he said himself, in fairness, in this podcast that he's been contributing to, that this is really like something out of the movies. You think in Con Air or whatever, the whole business of trying to fly him back safely and then transport him from the airport to, apparently he'd be brought straight to the special criminal court, which is currently being swept by the bomb squad, and then to Port Leash to in a special van, by the way, that has been purchased for the purpose, which is bomb-proof, bulletproof, with run-flat tyres. And then he'll be located within a prison, in one of Europe's most secure prisons. Sounds a little bit like the place where the Supermax prisons in the States, mm-hmm. where they keep the big drug gangsters with everything concrete and nailed to the floor. But meanwhile, he's delighted to be coming back, apparently. I don't know why he didn't do it years ago. He's probably asking himself. He's a proud Irishman, and all this stuff that people have read about him, apparently it's all nonsense. And Pat, we should remind ourselves that, of course, he is innocent until proven guilty, and he's entitled to his
and we'll be talking with Frank Rainey later on as to the whole judicial process, mm-hmm. and what he's going to be charged with, and so on. Yes. It seems as soon as he steps onto the tarmac, he will actually be charged at that moment.
Yes, he'll be charged.
The guard. We'll hear about that later on. Okay, so Kinahan aside, what else is taking your fancy?
The Sunday Indo lead story about the revenue cracking down on black market earnings, and that's 10 million in black market crackdown on, they said, rogue builders, vape shops, beauticians, garages and so on. But mind you, 10 million out of the entire tax take for the year so far.
Small change.
0.016%. And Ailish O'Hanlon has a very good piece actually in the Sunday Independent saying, hang on a second, you're talking here about people, about hairdressers earning a few extra bob, doing some work off the books, calling someone's house. You're talking about families running takeaways, these probably non-national families working every hour God sends. You're talking about people selling their homemade brown bread at Electric Picnic without charge and VAT. That really, are these the people we should be going after? And, you know, when you think about it, in a country where none of these people have the slightest hope of ever being able to buy a house, where does playing by the rules actually get you? And bear in mind, Pat, just last month it was announced that Transport for Ireland, or you and me, had written off 50 million euro that was squandered on an IT system that didn't work. So on the one hand, they're persecuting, and I mean, of course, the revenue does its job, and they clearly do their job very well. And, you know, you can't argue with that on one level. But on the other hand, would you trust this government with your tax money when you see how they waste it?
I don't have a choice, though, do I?
Well, apparently some people do, and they're exercising it. I think Ailish O'Hanlon's describing going to her garage. I think we've all had this experience. And she said the garage man said he wanted to be paid in cash, and she said, "No, sir, I refuse. I absolutely insist that you charge me VAT." I said, "No, I didn't. I paid him cash." And we've all done that. And I suppose that kind of feeds impact to the story on the front page of the Business Post about, you know, what the efforts that are being made to address the housing crisis and how badly
some of it is kind of, it's not that they squandered 11.8 billion. It's a spend, they call it. But some of it, you can say, is not squandering. Local authority housing capital funding, those actually building bricks and mortar, that's 2.2 billion. Social housing current expenditure, 667 million. Now, that's not capital. That's current.
Yeah.
Cost rental scheme is costing us 575 million. Homeless accommodation, 563 million.
Yeah.
Housing assistance, the HAP, 470 million.
Yeah.
And then the costliest tax measures are the 350 million spent on the rental tax credit, 250 million on the Help to Buy scheme, 250 million in a VAT reduction for new apartments, and 125 million on a corporate tax reduction for apartment construction.
I mean, when you think about it, look at that, for instance, 563 million on homeless accommodation. How many houses would that build? I know that's a very simplistic metric, but I mean, it's hard to dispute. Owen O'Brien, the Sinn Féin spokesman, is saying that the money being spent was not being strategically deployed. And I think he's right about that. He said, despite the volume of state investment, much of it is being spent on the wrong things. Too much taxpayers' money is being wasted on inflationary private developer subsidies rather than being directly invested in social and genuinely affordable homes. And that is true. And we've all seen the effect of some of these subsidies in that they push prices up because the vendors and the developers factor that extra cash into their charging, into their costing. So it's an extraordinary sum. And again, you know, come back to the 10 million that they've clawed in from hairdressers or nail bars or whatever. It just seems a drop in the ocean when you consider how. And I mean, the other concern about this, I suppose, is that these schemes are tried and then they're abandoned. And then we try another scheme. And then the money spent on that is gone and lost. And
the real question is whether HAP actually caused rental inflation.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't afford it, then, you know, what do you do? Well, the government gives you the money. Yeah. The landlord says, oh, they're good for 500 or 600, whatever it is. So I'll take that. Thank you very much.
I can increase my asking price. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it just seemed, I know you balked at the word squandering, but a lot of it seems to have been unwisely spent, I think, to put it that way.
Now, you have found an interesting academic story in the Sunday Independent.
Pat, this has been entertaining me for the entire week. I don't know how many people are up to speed with it here. It's the Jason R. Day story. It's on page 15 of the Sunday Independent. Basically, this guy was celebrated. I'd heard of him. He's famous academic in the UK, the youngest ever black professor in Harvard or in Cambridge University. He'd been, I remember hearing him as guest editing the Today programme. He was on panel shows. He was you know, an academic hero, celebrity. And then questions began to be asked about his thesis. And another academic identified the fact that up to 100 passages of it appeared to have been plagiarised. And then a lot more of the content, he said, was anecdotes and personal reflections, not academic stuff at all. And then people started digging into his history, and it turns out that he is a fabulist, I think is the only way to put it. He claims to have run six marathons in 6 days, which would have put him in the top 1% of British athletes. He'd been on an Olympic team.
Yeah.
He claimed to have raised millions for charity. He claimed that he had been a visiting professor in Ohio State University, Glasgow, and some other UK or American university. And they said, we never heard of him. I saw someone joking online. No, what he meant was he was visiting a professor in Ohio State University. But his entire story has fallen.
It's all a pack of lies.
All a pack of lies, yeah.
So you know, what makes him interesting is what kind of a Walter Mitty is he? I mean, is he a fantasist or is he a con man trying to extort a salary from an institution?
Well, all of the above. He seems to have one review I read of his new biography, which happens to have come out coincidentally, and is full of, again, absolute nonsense, really, that he claimed about himself. He claimed that he didn't speak until he was 11. A former classmate has come out and said, I remember him in school, he was chatting.
Babbling away.
He claimed he couldn't read or write until he was 18. He claimed that at 18 he was knocked down by a car and spent 3 months in a coma in locked-in syndrome. This doesn't make it into his biography. You'd think he'd have mentioned that if that was actually true. He claims that the book, the biography, which I've just read a review of, is apparently full of strangers coming up to him and saying, Jason, I know you're going to do something great. You are inspirational. Your name will be heard around the world. They were right, actually. Because the story
for all the wrong reasons.
Absolutely.
But I mean,
global.
He could become a novelist and do very well. He's got such a great imagination.
Well, this is it, though. Apparently, he resigned this week from Cambridge, but there seems to be strong evidence that his resignation statement was written by AI.
So even that. A couple of other stories. We mentioned one on the front page of The Independent. One third of Sock Dems voters are those who have deserted Sinn Féin.
I see that, yes. I mean, that's obviously worrying for Sinn Féin, and we'll question and make them question the direction that they're going to go. It seems to me that this is just... It's a function of the I suppose the support for Sinn Féin in the first place. You could say the people want change, they just want new faces, and you know from Sinn Féin's point of view, I guess a lot of the people at the top in the party have been there for some time now, and then Holly Cairns, of course, had disappeared for a while on maternity leave. And comes back and she's young and she's fresh and she's new and she's very articulate. And I don't know how this will translate into votes at the ballot box, to be honest, but it does seem that people are jaded with what they've got, and Sinn Féin have now come to be viewed in the same sort of cohort as the government parties. They've been around so long, they've been saying this, they've been promising that, nothing's getting done, we want change.
A few political stories as well as that one. Fianna Fáil spent almost €100,000 on two failed by-election campaigns.
Well, oh, goodness, yes.
They didn't win them, but they had to compete, I suppose.
Yeah, they had to.
On Mike in Clacton, and there's a big piece in the Sunday Times about a visit to the warring parties in Clacton.
That's going to be fantastic. Count Binface is the surprise candidate there. This, of course, is the election that Nigel Farage called when he resigned, and he's standing again, and one of his main competitors is a man in a bin. Yeah. Basically, in a bin costume, who seems to be doing very well. And he has some fantastic policies. You know, he wants to nationalise Adele, apparently. He's totally a joke candidate, but he's standing and he's going to get some support. And I see people in Clacton saying this is making a mockery of our this constituency and of politics.
There is concern in Reform, Nigel Farage's party, that Restore, a little bit further to the right of Farage, might do him harm.
Might yes.
Yeah, I mean, indeed, when you've 34 candidates, it gets very diluted.
It gets very, it does. And obviously that element on the right is going to fracture because Farage has been, you know, he's been under fire. The reason he stepped down in the first place was because of all these questions about funding and his friendship with these cyber millionaires and, you know, unaccounted for wealth and so on. So, it does seem as though they're going to divide and conquer.
Lots of stuff in the papers. And you were surprised. It's August. It's silly season.
Yes,
but lots of non-silly stuff besides Clacton in the papers.
Yes, indeed. But one of the things that has kind of, I suppose, exercised a lot of columnists, including myself this week, I'm in the Sunday Indo Patches, the Sunday Times, I better correct that, but is the Tradwife story. This was a single line or two out of a new action plan for girls and women announced by Norma Foley last week. And it mentions the manosphere, you know, this toxic masculinity peddled by the likes of Andrew Tate, and then says, you know, and women and girls really should be careful of, they didn't actually use the word tradwife, but that is the suggestion, that women will be so enchanted by the idea of staying at home and baking bread and canning their own vegetables and scouring their U-bends that they'll abandon all career objectives. I think it's a little bit of a silly season emphasis on this, to be honest, because I don't believe that there are too many women in this country who could afford to stay at home with their children. I think there was a survey about a year ago that found that if they had the choice, something like 68% of working mothers would stay at home. But the reality is, being a trad wife or a stay-at-home wife and homeschooling your kids and, you know, knitting your own muesli is actually not an option for women in Ireland. So I don't know. I don't know that is something that really should be a lot of concern about.
By the way, the aforementioned Count Binface, he did a very good interview with The Rest Is Politics with Alistair and Rory. So I must catch up on that. Brenda Power, thank you very much for joining us in studio this morning.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.